to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. I am your co-host, Amanda Nduka, and I'm sitting next to...
My name is Gina Ray Ramos. And today we have Wilson Cruz on the podcast, who played Dr. Hugh Colbert. I guess we should say that there's a minor spoiler. I mean, if you haven't
watched... Let's just say he plays Hugh Colbert on
Star Trek Discovery.
Which is on the CBS Access app.
Yeah.
And he made history with this role because this was the first time the franchise has featured...
An openly gay couple
as prominent characters,
Yeah. And then he also is a groundbreaker with, y'all might remember from the, I guess, early 90s, My So-Called Life, where he played Ricky, one of the, I want to say maybe the first, I may be wrong, but openly gay characters
TV. That was a major, he was a major character
He was part of the core cast. So he was just breaking ground all over the place. And in this episode, we talk about My So-Called Life, which I'm obsessed with. Mm-hmm. Of course, Star Trek.
Gone Too Soon, My So-Called Life.
Deserved a second season.
Yeah.
We want to know what happened to Brian Krakow. Anyways, but we talk about his role in Star Trek Discovery, his role in theater and activism. He's just an all-around, activist.
Yeah, he's been doing this in a while. He's definitely used his platform.
For good.
For good. In the LGBTQ community, for people of color.
And for the Latino community
as well. So without further ado, here is Wilson. Thank you so much for being here and doing this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And so, Wilson, you play Dr. Colbert on Star Trek Discovery, who is one half of the franchise's first gay couple. But not only that, you were Enrique.
Enrique.
Yeah.
Depending which character it was.
Right. Depending on who he was talking to.
Yeah, yeah. On My So-Called Life, which was a great show, by the way, but also was groundbreaking because it was the first leading character that was openly gay. So just having those two moments with LGBT characters, what is it like?
Especially in two different time periods.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely different than it was 25 years ago.
Okay.
I can't believe I say
that. That's interesting.
But it was 25 years ago when we made the pilot. You know, I think that at the time when I was 19, I was fully aware of where we were in terms of where the movement was. And so I knew that there was responsibility coming with this, with playing that character at that specific time. And now it feels like there are more LGBT characters on television. We definitely need more of a diverse representation of LGBT people on TV. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting to me that being a part of the first gay couple on Star Trek, that the response has been so enormous. Mm-hmm. because I think part of it is because Trekkies have waited 50 years, you know, over 50 years to have an LGBT person or any representation on the TV shows. And so the response to it was bigger than I had anticipated. I thought that the audience would be like, you know, oh, it's another gay couple, but mm-hmm. it was a much bigger deal in the Star Trek world than I even knew. So, you know, I think for me, you know, I'm an actor first, and I enjoy what I do, and I love what I do, and it's an added benefit to me when I get to use my work to represent my communities and to tell the stories of what our lives are actually like. Mm-hmm. And I think that television and film have played an enormous role in the way that people view LGBT people, and I feel privileged to have been part of the beginnings of that, and also of the current climate.
Yeah, could you talk about real quick what was the biggest difference you noticed or you remember from the response you got when you did My So-Called Life versus the response you're getting for Star Trek Discovery?
You know, I tell this really funny story about, like, I used to go out with... It's not a very funny story. It's a story. I've put all the pressure on it.
Right. Now we're expecting to laugh.
Right. It better be funny. It's not that interesting. Sorry. That, you know, I used to go out with Claire, you know, I'd go out with Claire and AJ and Devin, who were the girls on the show, because I hung out with the girls. And they would, the response to them was, you know, pretty overwhelming. And, you know, people would come up to me, but not in the same way. But as soon as I was old enough to be out and about, mm-hmm. you know, 5 or 6 years later, when the 15-year-olds and the 16-year-olds who were watching the show at the time, who were questioning their own sexuality, were of age and were at those same venues, that's when I realized the impact.
Okay.
And saw the impact from the viewers. And that was really moving to me. And it took a while, because they needed to come to terms with their own orientation and how they felt about it. Yeah. So now it's really interesting that all of these young people, or those young people, are now in their 40s or late 30s, and really they really look to Ricky as this character who helped them define their ideas of what they thought about the LGBT movement, and I'm truly humbled that I had that effect on them. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was in that group. So you totally hit the nail on the head with that, because growing up in Texas and seeing Ricky on screen, I'm just like, oh, he's kind of like me, but I can't say anything.
Right.
But it's a slow burn. It was a slow burn for, I guess, I like to say that I'm not Generation X, I'm not a millennial, I'm in that bastardized generation that like doesn't really, has a weird identity.
Yeah.
So
how old are you?
I'm 38.
Yeah, you're my brother's age. He feels the same way. That he's not quite Gen X and he's not quite Gen Y
or millennial or Gen Z or whatever you're calling it now. But yeah, we're part of that generation. We're like, oh, we know what it's like to not have a cell phone, but we can't live without it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, yeah. So as a queer actor of color, how careful are you now in choosing projects that won't pigeonhole you?
Right. You know, it's two-pronged. Mm-hmm. A, you know, I'm an actor. It's what I do for a living. It's how I make my living, to be honest. It's how I get healthcare, right? Through my union.
Yeah.
So you have to balance that. For every actor, it's a balance of, you know, doing work that is meaningful to you, and balancing that with making a living. For me, I feel like if there's a problematic role that comes to me and I'm called in for it or auditioning for it or it's offered to me, my first question is, is this an atmosphere in which I can collaborate with the creatives on the show or the film? Yeah. Is it fixable, right? Can I come in and have a conversation and make tweaks that will make it less problematic? And I think that as actors, we should look at ourselves as collaborators and not just hired talent. That we have a point of view that's important, and you know, we're responsible for creating a three-dimensional character, and if there are problems with it, we should be able to have conversations about it. And many times there have been roles that started out problematic and turned out to be some of my favorite experiences, because we were able to flesh that character out. So I consider it a lot when I look at roles. You know, is it something that I can be proud of and that I can stand and be proud of it after it's done? And I have to also consider, do I need this job right now?
You know, yeah, yeah.
It's a 20.
Everyone has to work.
Right. It's a 30-year career. Not everything is going to be Ricky Vasquez. And sometimes it's my responsibility to see how close I can get it to that.
You kind of touched on this, but since you started, you know, as Ricky, or like even when you just started acting in general, have you had any experiences where you wouldn't compromise your kind of dignity or like your identity?
Sure. I mean, there's one experience that stands out in my mind. It was a couple of decades ago, and we had agreed on a costume.
Mm-hmm.
And when I showed up to set, the costume was completely different, mm-hmm. and risque, mm-hmm. as opposed to, mm-hmm. something much more conservative that we had agreed upon beforehand in our fitting. And so I had to stand my ground and have a conversation with the director, and who wasn't thrilled with the fact that I was
that you had an opinion.
Yeah. and to the point where I said, well, you know, that's great. If you want somebody to wear this, then you should find someone who's willing to wear it. But that person is not me.
Oh.
So
I'm
good to go. And I called my agents and she said, that's fine. Get yourself home and we'll deal with the ramifications. But I never got to my car because they were like, okay, you can just wear what we'd agreed on. And so
that's good. That's like
I was 21 years old at the time.
Yeah. Did you experience a lot of like, being a person of color, did you experience a lot of like stereotypical type, maybe like castings or kind of the breakdowns that you would see about characters that fit your mold?
Yeah. Was that? I think it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
I didn't let you finish, but I think it's unavoidable to have problematic roles come your way. And I think, again, it's my job to seek out roles that are interesting. And I really feel like for the last 25, 30 years, for most of the roles that I audition on, they're not asking for a gay Latino guy to come in, and you know, they're not looking for that specific type.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to go in there and say, hey, I'm gonna give you this option, a really good option of not a white guy or not a straight guy. And that's my job when I go in for that meeting and that audition. So I try to concentrate less on people's prejudices and concentrate more on giving people a reason to give me, mm-hmm. the job.
Yeah. And then I guess we can go back to your show. Your character was recently killed off.
Yeah.
There was
spoilers.
Yeah, we'll say there's spoilers,
but it's been like up. It's been a, I want to say
it's, has it's been
the,
a month.
It's yeah.
been over a
so
month.
If you haven't
what's
seen
the
it,
statute
then
of limitations?
I don't know. It's a really good question.
So you had a really interesting question about that.
So Dr. Culber died, unfortunately, mm-hmm. or quote unquote died.
Right. He is killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is killed. When you were reading, when you signed on and when you read the script for that episode,
yeah.
what was your initial reaction? And were you scared that it was going to fall into the whole trope of the bare your gaze trope that has been kind of been infecting Hollywood?
Yeah. I found out like 2 weeks before. Is that true? No, I found out a little bit over a month now that I'm thinking about it.
Did you clutch your pearls when you read it?
I was actually, they didn't send it to me. They, you know, because Aaron and Gretchen, the showrunners, are actual friends of mine.
Like, okay.
I've known them for years. I've known them. So I didn't find out that way. They actually told me, he gets killed off in episode 10. They told me before we started shooting episode 9, and I was actually on set for 13 Reasons Why.
Okay.
And they had called me and told me that Dr. Culber would be killed in episode 10.
Mm-hmm.
And my initial reaction was, as is most of the time, tears.
Mm-hmm.
because I was, you know, incredibly excited about being a part of the show. And it was apparently coming to an end sooner than I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But very quickly after that, I found out that I would be coming back. And spoiler, I come back 2 episodes later. And then we've had a long conversation throughout that process about the plans for Dr. Culber. And I am at liberty to say that that his death was a very small part of a very long story.
Okay.
That now we know that this had to happen
in order
for us to tell the story that we're about to tell.
Yeah.
And now that I know that, I am thrilled.
Yeah.
I was concerned
initially
about the barrier gaze trope. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I wrestled with this idea of, how do I have this conversation with the creatives and the showrunners on the show without seeming like an actor who's trying to save his job?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Makes sense. Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a delicate balancing act. But I think, you know, they just couldn't tell me initially that there was a longer plan involved. So I was relieved. Mm-hmm. And then I was also relieved that once Dr. Culber was killed, that everyone, CBS, all of us on the show, wanted to assure the audience that this wasn't a bury your gaze trope. And so we went out and told people that I would be back.
Yeah.
And when the show comes back and we tell the story that we're going to tell, it's going to all make complete sense, I promise.
Yeah. Well, it's you like, heard it here, he promised.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, breaking news, promised. Well, it's also the Star Trek world or sci-fi and fantasy. So, like, no one's really ever dead.
Yes, it's science fiction. Yeah. Like, you know.
People come back to life.
Yeah. Death is yet is but a bump in the road.
Yeah. You played Angel on Rent.
Yeah.
Angel, the heart of that show. Anyways, so like, I'm guessing you're like really into music theater and
I am.
That. So you're stranded on an island.
Uh huh.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You are only allowed one musical soundtrack.
That's me.
As entertainment, okay. What would it be? Can't be a compilation.
Oh, that's really tough.
She like has.
I mean, if I wasn't in the show, I would still say this. I would say Rent.
Yeah,
soundtrack. I clean my house to that, that recording. There's so many. Sweeney Todd. I'm sorry, just went out of my head. The Ballad of Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, that music, the soaring orchestrations of that original recording is unbelievable. So if I'm going to pick one outside of the one I was in, I would pick Sweeney Todd.
Okay. That's a good answer.
is there a type of role that you haven't played that you are dying to grasp right now?
Yeah, I think, well, I've always said that I've wanted to, you know, it's a touchy subject, but I feel that Prince's story needs to be told.
Ooh.
And I feel like I'm the best person to tell it.
We'll make it happen.
So that's a dream role.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised nobody's done Prince. Has somebody done
Prince? I think
Prince?
People, I only see people.
I think people are early.
And I think people are scared
people
maybe.
Did people like, did Michael.
Yeah.
But they didn't do it well.
Don't you say it.
But Prince is
what
like.
I'm saying, Michael's, I think there's been like two or three Michael biopics. Michael Jackson.
Yeah, I just remember
there's
that
one. American Dream or something.
American Dream was one. That was way.
Was that the one where it was like Jackson 5 and it kind of
yeah,
showed?
And then it showed. It
Angela Bassett.
Yeah. I actually like that one.
I liked it too.
Was that made for TV? It was like
VH1. It was made for TV. It was like a.
I think it was ABC.
ABC.
Yeah, it was like a three. It wasn't like a
three part series.
Yeah, three part series. Yeah, yeah.
I remember that. I just remember that like vividly. Like Angela Bassett. Was it Lawrence Fishburne the dad?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like all those it's two, like, yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, and they did they do Tina?
Yeah, they did Ike and Tina. It was, jeez. They were Ike and Tina together.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They were. Yeah,
wow.
For sure.
What is currently at the top of your bucket list right now? Besides the Prince thing.
Well, I'm putting together my cabaret show right now.
Oh.
Yeah, that I hope to do within the next year. I mean, I'm. It's very early in the development process, mm-hmm. but I'm working with a really great musical director, Michael Orland, and I'm looking forward to that.
Is it going
to
be here in L.A. or New York? Or?
Hopefully a number of cities, but we're going to work that out. It's going to have to deal with the schedule and all of that, so.
Oh.
I just, you know, it might take a while for me to get to every city I want to, but I'm going to do it on my time off.
Oh.
Nice.
Well, that, and you know, I have 13 Reasons Why, second season coming out in a few months. So I'm excited for people to see that.
Yeah.
Speaking of that.
Yeah, speaking of that, speaking that was you. That. Read our minds.
Thank you for that segue. Is there anything you can tell us about the upcoming season? I can tell you I'm in it.
Yeah. You could paint broad strokes.
Exactly. It could be
on Netflix.
It could be themes. It could be just.
I think it's safe to say that We continue the story. And
as Amy's giving him the
That's fine.
I can tell you I'm in every episode.
Okay, okay. Good. How about that? Okay, good.
Okay, that's good enough for us.
There, we'll there's take something. It. There's something in there.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nugget of information.
My publicist is sweating bullets in the corner.
That's fine. That's fine. I think we have enough on that.
I think
that.
We're good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, final question.
Yes.
Is there a underrepresented person in the industry who isn't in the mainstream you think deserves time in the spotlight and people need to recognize, whether it be an actor, director, any storyteller or anything?
You know, I'm going to stick with my family friends. Mm. I mean, you know, my friends, my family of friends. Mm. And there's a young woman who's ridiculously talented. Her name is Azita Ghanizada. Oh. And she actually has been working with SAG and AFTRA to have more visibility of Middle Eastern and North African women especially. Mm-hmm. But she was on a show called Alphas a few years ago. She just did a movie that was at Sundance last year with Michael Shannon and Rachel Weisz, and the name is escaping me right now, but she's brilliant, she's gorgeous, she's talented, and I want to see more of her on, and I think that's a demographic that we don't see enough of.
Yeah. What was the name again? I just like hearing it.
Azita Ghanizada.
My God.
We'll
look out for her.
Yeah, definitely.
You should.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
Well, she's probably the most famous Afghani actress that there is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Working actress.
You should get her on the podcast.
Yeah.
You should. I can make that happen.
Oh! Yeah. We might have to reach out for you. Yeah.
She actually worked with SAG to include Middle Eastern and North African actors in their casting reports so that they're counted.
Oh, yeah.
Not just as part of
the group, but that
they're.
Yeah.
So they're just not the. Yeah, so she's. They're not just not the other. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh, that's a good. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we probably.
Which will hopefully work to get more representation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, Wilson,
thank
you. This has been enlightening.
Such enlightening.
Wilson the Cruz.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime.
Cool.
And we look forward to seeing 13 Reasons Why, even though we don't know anything about it. We know you're in it.
Even more so now because you said you're in all the episodes.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, thank you very much, Wilson.
Thank you.
Thank you.